Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Heavy Hole. My name is Tom.
Whoa. My name is Big Will, a.k.a. Uncle Buck. Tom, I know you're far away, but now you got some weird English accent. What's going on? Justin, you're here. You heard that, right?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, it's fine. I did hear that. There was a twang.
Yeah,
a
little bit. Hello, hello. It's me, Tom.
Yeah.
Is Tom in witness protection?
Tom, where are you? Are you at liberty to say?
Well, first of all, that accent comes out whenever I'm bending over to get a beer, stretching. So that has nothing to do with my location. But my location is that of Georgia, Savannah, Georgia. I have it on my mind, and hopefully I'm on its mind. I'm down here doing some house hunting, boys.
Okay, yeah, getting off the island, allegedly.
Absolutely. World tour.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so I shot down here over the course of 2 days. Stop one, Mechanicsville, Virginia. I had a nice hangout with my buddy Landfill. I'm going to be stopping there on the way back as well.
Okay.
Might be very doing nice. Some material there, allegedly, but it was great to see him.
Yeah, stay tuned. Phil. For listeners, that's Phil of illustrious alleged drug-related band, Cannabis Corpse.
Allegedly from that band, yes.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. band may or may not have drugs in their dealing. Who knows? Could just be an act.
Yeah, another... Yeah, he's, you know, if you don't know, municipal
brand
waste,
new legal
little
band.
Band
in New York.
Yeah. Yeah, it's now legal to listen to Cannabis Corpse in New York.
Yeah, it kind of takes the edge off. He's got to do something else, some kind of like maybe a heroin-based band. You really push the...
Yeah. Whoa.
Like Godsmack.
Easy. Oh, God. See, now you got Justin back on the Godsmack. It doesn't take much to get Justin to bring up Godsmack. I don't want to grab the old segue too quick, but we do have a Boston-adjacent guest, Justin, so just get the Godsmack out of your system now.
Yeah, I'm never the one who's so far away. Never.
Yeah. You're not tonight. You're not so far away tonight. Justin, see, when I take the segue out early, Justin spins it around on me, man, but... Yeah, Justin, you're still here. You're not moving out of New York yet, like so many of our friends.
No, I got a mortgage, but yeah.
People don't want to be subjects of King Cuomo. Whoa. But what's going on over there still in my neighborhood?
I'm staying here until the Rangers win a cup, so that's the next 20 years I'll be here. Dude, it's been a great week, mostly because I got a bird feeder.
Wow.
And I hooked that sucker up. That shit is hanging 80 feet in the air above my backyard, and I've just been sitting out and watching the traffic, like a sort of air traffic controller, the different birds coming in.
Interesting.
I'm not going to say that like I have any urge to bird, you know, in the traditional sense, but man, their company is welcome, and I love it. I'm having a great time.
Wow.
The best, hands down, best purchase I've ever made on this property that I own. Very nice.
Wow. Nice. I love nature. I'm sure that this doesn't have anything to do with hallucinogenic mushrooms, that you're appreciating nature right now.
It's just in the air, bud. It's in the air, bud.
Air Bud, great movie from back in the day. Dogs are great, too. totally derailed me. I had something there. But listen, the bird feeder, the dogs, everything's good.
Yeah, man, how you doing?
Bird is the word in the wise words of Peter Griffin.
Throw it back.
I'm throwing it back to you because speaking of Peter Griffin, we got memed pretty good today. I got a chuckle. They made me chuckle a little bit out there with the memes. The kids, the young people, they memed me pretty hard today, and I got a nice laugh at it, but let me look this up on the old there. Extreme death memes. That's you could get at them on Instagram. All right, they got some memes for you for your death metal. They memed us pretty good today. I'm not going to get into it. You can peep them out though. So we're going to give them a little shout. I got a nice laugh out of that in my miserable day of listening to death metal alone without the fun part. Fast forward through all the fun parts.
All you listeners out there, call your local meme lord and request more Heavy Hole memes.
Yeah.
Even though that I think I might be the only one, I'm very offended by all of these.
Trying to ride that meme train to the sky, just like Sanguisuga Bagji, allegedly.
Yeah, man. We're taking notes.
I have another thing I'm working on, a little side gig if this whole podcasting about ancient death metal doesn't work out.
Ooh, a lifeboat?
Yeah, a little lifeboat. There's like things, allegedly, there's conspiracies, and there, you know, CIA guys and people, they retire and they might write a fictional novel.
They're all true.
You know, there's something there. Yeah, you can say more with fiction than you can with the nonfiction. You know, you can read between the lines a little bit with some of these backstories that these shadowy figures write, right?
Coincidence, question mark?
Well, unrelated to that notion completely, I happen to be working on a line of fictional books that take place in a suburban area adjacent to New York City. It's about an aging, middle-aged, overweight death metal singer who has a series of incidents, coincidental kind of accidents where he ingests substances and does chores for his aging parents and relatives. And gets caught in wacky situations that have no bearing on anything that really happened. Like, for instance, in chapter one, this character that has no relation to any real-life people at all that I know or am, he ingests hallucinogenic mushrooms and then is called upon to explain how to hook up the new television and the Roku and explain what Netflix is to his aging mother. This is part... Yeah, it's never happened in real life. Chapter two... He ingests edible, now legal in New York State. In the fictionalized universe, and these marijuana edibles are also legal. And he ingests them, and he goes to play some death metal. And now it's time to go to the rug store and help mom pick out rugs for her house, because she needs help with that. It's a thing that's been going on.
Riveting saga.
Yeah, I really like this. Does the main character have two lanky friends?
They might resemble Beavis and Butthead, allegedly. I don't know.
Just picking through the garbage at your mom's house.
Yeah, sifting through the ashes of my life in the ashtray. Oh, God. All right, so...
Gonna find that roach. Gonna get it.
Yeah. No, just listen. Just because I live in Huntington Station doesn't mean I have roaches, Justin.
That's true.
Don't judge me on my township. And let's listen, just because you brought up Godsmack before, let's not judge tonight's guest on where they're from, because we got a Massachusetts guy tonight. We're not going to talk about the old sports teams. We're going to talk about death metal one way or another. I'm talking about none other than Peter Blue Spinazzola of the bands Dysentery, Fit for an Autopsy, Sexcrement, Parasitic Extirpation, and more. We're gonna get into it with him. Old friend of mine. Glad to have him on the show. We're going to have to call up Boston there and get him on the phone.
Heavy shit. Tom, you got Boston's phone number down there?
From Georgia.
We'll get him on.
Yeah. Big Will from Heavy Hole Podcast. Join with me, my loyal co-host Justin and Tom, as always. And tonight our special guest is none other than Peter Blue Spinazzola, bassist of Dysentery, Fit for an Autopsy, Sexcrement, Parasitic Extirpation, possibly internal bleeding at one point. I've seen pictures. What's up, Blue? How you doing?
What is up, my man? How you doing?
I'm very good, man, and it's great to hear your voice and to have seen you in the Skype while we were setting this up, man. It's been a while, and we've shared stages at fests and shows a lot over the years with different bands, so it's good to be here to catch up with you finally and to finally get you into the show. We've been trying to work this out for a while, so how's everything going currently, man?
Good, you know, it's kind of been the same shit, different year at this point, but, you know, just kind of holding it down and, you know, making the best of the time while, you know, things are the way they are. You know, hopefully we're at the end of that.
Yeah, yeah, a lot more of the same, man, unfortunately, this year. But we dabble in the present on this show. We spend a lot of time in the past and a little bit of time in the future. So right now, you've heard the show before. You know where I'm going, Pete. When we go back to your history, are you from a particularly musical family of musicians or people that are inclined towards rock and metal music?
Well, as far as history of musicians or anything like that, no, definitely not. I'm the only person in my family that has ever really pursued music or anything of that sort. But my family has been pretty, you know, accepting to, I guess, hard rock music over the years from when I was starting as a child, I guess, definitely.
Okay, and another thing, I've always known you as Blue.
Yes.
Blue is what I've always called you. It's funny, I just called you Pete just now because I have it written down in the research, and when you're credited on a lot of the things I've been looking up today and taking notes on, it's Peter Blue Spinazzola. Where does the name Blue come from?
It's a very, very old nickname that stems from probably about 20 years ago, you know. I just like to tell people, you know, I'm just a really depressing person, so, you know, it's just a clever nickname to let people know I'm really a big bummer.
That's not true. I like seeing you. I like talking to you, man.
You know, I try not to be.
So it's you and King Buzzkill from the Melvins. I get it.
Yeah. King Buzzkill. That's good.
So what in your childhood inclines you towards maybe more subversive music? Is it punk? Is it hardcore? Is it metal? When do you start becoming one of the weird kids, so to speak, in terms
of
music?
You know, I definitely credit with my parents very early on, you know, feeding me the hard rock of the time that they grew up with, your Led Zeppelin, lots of Aerosmith, Alice Cooper, you know, stuff like that, you know, your typical, I guess, proto metal, even if you will,
yeah.
which was kind of the easy step forward, I think. I remember when I was young, you know, my cousin's Iron Maiden album, so the artwork immediately grabbed me kind of thing. But that was like, that was before I'd even discovered music. But, you know, I'd kind of just been kind of getting the trickle down of whatever I was hearing from my parents here and there. But I think pretty early on, I remember one of my earliest memories was getting a copy of And Justice for All on cassette from my local library, nonetheless, which is kind of weird, but I made a cassette dub on my parents' dual cassette deck, and I made a photocopy of the cover of that, and kind of became my my pre-music buying Bible that kind of sparked my interest, I guess.
Wow.
I was probably like, you know, 10, 11, you know, just kind of being like, oh, that's crazy, that's wild, that's way different than, you know, Toys in the Attic, which I've been, you know, listening to from my parents kind of thing. But, you know, it was, you know, did the normal progression from there, you know. You know, it was the early 90s, so I was also getting into, you know, your alternative rocks at the time and stuff like that. But at the same time, I was getting little trickles of, you know, heavier stuff here and there. And just kind of, you know, as the years go on, I kind of just found myself liking the heavy stuff. You know, the Metallicas, the Slayers, the Anthrax, and from there I went for my Motorheads and my new wave of British heavy metal, and then eventually it kind of led to, you know, early 80s UK hardcore, you know, Discharge, like the crossover scene, and then, you know, the natural progression towards, you know, extreme music when I was my mid-teens, I guess.
Oh, okay, and let me stop you there. A legend coming in wild with this bootlegged from the library and Justice for All story. Lars Ulrich will ruin your life. You saw what he did to those Napster kids. So
yeah,
let's,
you know,
slow
it was,
down
it was
with that.
Pre-Napster, you know, I was just, yeah, you know, I was allegedly, you know, distributing, I guess,
yeah,
cassette copies.
Yeah, you donated that copy back to the library. Let's just leave
it
at
that.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
Lars is
going
to nail you to the wall, bro. All right.
He does listen.
Saw what he did to Napster kids.
Big fan of the
there
show.
Wasn't there a Napster kid that got like a bill for $1 million or something?
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah, it was a hefty price.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right. Yeah, shout out to Lars. No,
it's okay. Everybody's got to start somewhere. I guess it was me, you know, pirating before Lars was catching with him, I guess.
Yeah, under the radar. I just love it, though. That's actually really cool. Now, here's something. Are you originally from Boston?
Yeah. I grew up just north of Boston.
Okay, and now Boston is, like, famous for its hardcore scene going back many years. Does that play any role in your upbringing and your getting into extreme music, the infamous and large Boston hardcore scene?
I'm going to have to say absolutely because, you know, you guys coming from the Northeast United States, you kind of know there's a blur, you know, growing up as a extreme music fan throughout the 90s into the late 90s and into the new millennium, you know, there is a blurred line between metal and hardcore. You know, it was an underground music, and at the time there was a lot of integrating between the styles. You know, and it was just kind of at a point when I was getting into it, I couldn't differentiate it. I didn't know what was crossover, what was straight up hardcore, what was, you know, what leaned on punk, what leaned on metal. You know, it was just kind of all being exposed all at once. And eventually, as the years went on, was I able to kind of filter them together. But, you know, I have to say absolutely, because, you know, my love of metal and hardcore is very, very, very big.
Yeah, and, you know, Boston, that, you know, look, obviously, violence in the hardcore community is, it happens, but it also is overhyped in some respects, and it happens for different reasons to different parties. But Boston has had a reputation at different points for being a particularly violent scene. Would you say that that's fair to say?
Absolutely. You know, and over the years, maybe the proliferation of, like, you know, media documents and what have you have kind of hyped that up even more so. But, you know, definitely gets brought up to me a lot, you know, considering the style of music I play and maybe some of the style of shows I play. But, like, the way I see it is, metal and hardcore in its root is kind of a violent, aggressive music. So things of a violent, aggressive nature are bound to happen at shows. You know, a lot of people use it as a cathartic kind of, you know, expressive way. And, you know, with metal comes, you know, I guess a large percentage of, you know, people that, you know, are, I guess, the weirdos and the people that, you know, maybe are there to make it not so fun. But, you know, that's kind of, I guess that's kind of the byproduct of an aggressive style of music, I guess, like that.
Yeah, not all the outsiders are looking to come together and find common ground with other outsiders, necessarily. And also, what I'm kind of getting at, too, is just Boston itself. I mean, I don't want to get too deep into American history and the history of Boston and all that sort of thing, but there's a lot of turmoil in the history of Boston. It's one of the oldest cities in the United States, and certain attitudes and certain clashes that might be prevalent in Boston. Do you feel that might have been an influence into that violence in the hardcore scene, outside of, like, maybe, like, you know, if in another city you might not have those certain attitudes and that certain mindset?
It's kind of hard for me to, I guess, to be the right person to make the call on that, because I don't know, like, while I'm aware of its history and stuff like that, when I was getting into the underground music throughout the late 90s, I think I was too young to just be that fully entrenched in, you know? I kind of just saw it from the turn of the millennium in, you know? You know, it's hard to really make that
call. Well, you're also from kind of inside the bubble, and I'm an outsider, I guess, to that region. Also, I consider myself a little bit of an outsider to New York hardcore, because I'm out here on Long Island, and I see two totally different styles and personalities, but I see something similar going on, I think, just in the mindset of the city. The same way hip-hop regionally has different personalities, I feel hardcore does too, and that's kind of all I'm getting at. And I think it's fair to say that Boston hardcore has been a big influence on Dysentery over the years, one of your main bands that people know you for. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, 100%, without a doubt. You know, Dysentery owes its sound from equal parts brutal death metal and, you know, New York hardcore. And, you know, as you can clearly tell in the music, you know, hip-hop beats and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I got some notes here going back. I know that you're very early on in Dysentery in one of the very first demos in 2007. Can you go tell us a little bit before we get into all that? Let's just talk about music. Is bass your first instrument, and when do you start playing your first instrument?
Bass is not my first instrument, and actually, a lot of the bands I've played in over the years have been actually guitar a lot of the times. Bass, I started doing in bands a little bit later in the game, but yeah, I started playing guitar first, I think maybe, you know, 13, 14 or something like that. But my first bands, I was playing guitar for years.
Okay, and what do you remember that first guitar? Can you tell us a little bit about acquiring it and what it was?
Oh, my very first guitar was a Loner from the place I took my very first lessons was, and it was a Fernandez Stinger. So I think it was like some sort of like a Squire Fernandez like equivalent, but half the tuning pegs didn't work. I couldn't tune it. I didn't know if it was in tune. It was a great starting point, but my first guitar that I bought myself was a Fender Mexican Standard like mid 90s Stratocaster, like probably like in like 96 or 97. I bought like after a summer of like working kind of deal, and then I like kind of put humbuckers in it. It was Arctic White, put a black pickguard on it, wanted to make it look like I was an Iron Maiden immediately.
Sweet. Well, that I'm sure that looked sweet, man, but I love the story about that Stinger, man. I love hearing about people's first guitars and all that.
Oh,
words.
Yeah, it was a piece of garbage. I had no clue what was going on. No clue.
Beautiful, man. I love it, though. Now, you know, I mentioned in the intro bassist, you know, you even caught me with that. It's probably something that maybe irks you a little bit sometimes because you don't get credit because people know you as a bassist nowadays for some of your work. Where do you go with that guitar? What's your first group that you join or start?
Well, when I was a younger man in my public schooling days, I really didn't know anybody that, you know, listened to extreme music or played stuff like that. I remember, like, you know, towards my end of my high school years, I found a couple people that, you know, I could guess play what was basically, you know, light Fear Factory style stuff. But, like, I didn't know anybody that played metal or listened to extreme music. And it wasn't until I got out of high school that I actually found, you know, my, like, the first people that I could call my friends that actually listened to extreme music and later on start my first real serious, I guess you'd call it, band. In like 2001, basically.
Okay, and what band was that?
That was my first real band called Brazen Kubrick. It was a band what existed from like 01 to like 05, and it was a very crude, primitive, juvenile band that was just kind of a mishmash of all styles of extreme music. You know, we kind of filtered our love like death metal, grindcore, metalcore. Any extreme music that was going on at the turn of the millennium, we were kind of throwing together in a band and no direction, just having fun with friends, you know, trying to create music. And that was kind of my introduction to the local Boston metal scene as, you know, as a late teenager, you know, going in. And, you know, that's kind of how I met a lot of my first friends in the scene and kind of learned the ways of the game, you know, booking my own band, recording my own demos, you know, booking my own shows, you know, for touring bands and all of that stuff. In those early 2000s is really where I cut my teeth with that band and just kind of figuring out how to kind of do all that stuff.
It sounds like, it reminds me of when we had Big Chocolate from Disfiguring the Goddess, and he talked about being on MySpace and looking for bands that had death metal, hardcore and grindcore as like their description. Like that was
I remember through the MySpace days, as you know, my bands at the time, you know, they were all three of those tags were definitely on the bands I was doing at the time.
If you're from a certain generation, and I looked at your metallum today, Blue, you're only a few months younger than me, man. You and me are from the same generation pretty much. you remember the early 2000s as that kind of like wild frontier of blending metal and hardcore and whatever else, man. It was an interesting time, you know.
Yeah, it was fun. A lot of bands were trying a lot of different things and, you know, throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So now you come through that. I don't want to discount any other groups that you were performing with, but as I mentioned before, I believe in 2007 you joined Dysentery, right? Would you say that's like the first like main full-time group you're in after Raising Kubrick?
Actually, right after Raising Kubrick disbanded at the end of 2005, I started playing guitar for a New Hampshire-based death metal band called Porphyria.
Okay.
We were pretty active in the years 2005 to 2007 up to me joining Dysentery at the time. And we're kind of like, it was like brutal technical death metal, but a little bit hanging on that lurchier Suffocation style chunky side. But we were definitely like right in the middle of that MySpace boom, at the time. We did one EP, called What No Eyes Could See, which I joined right after the recording of that EP, but we did a couple years of touring around the Northeast, you know, supporting that stuff. But that was really where I first cut my teeth, kind of doing a harder, I guess, quote-unquote harder grind for an underground death metal band at the time. But that ended at about the end of 2007. At that time, I joined Dysentery on bass, and right at the end of Porphyria, I formed Parasitic Extirpation with the singer of Porphyria.
Okay, interesting. Now, New Hampshire, that sounds like a bit of a hike from Boston to being a band, is it?
In New England, it's not really that bad. The drive for that was to Manchester, New Hampshire. It was just shy of an hour. Really not that bad. Like, even like, you know, the southernmost part of Maine for me is barely over an hour's drive. New England, you can get to a lot of areas within, you know, like a 2 hour drive. You can get to Connecticut, Providence, you know, Western Mass is only 2.5. Albany's 3 hours. It's not that bad.
Yeah, you shoot through all those trees and mountains on the highway, now that I think about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, blast on through.
Yeah, all right. So, now, because my frame of reference, I really met you through your work with Parasitic Extirpation. I remember you guys performed a few shows with us, and I believe it was us and Geigen and Pieron when Artificial Brain was doing that tour, right, many years ago?
Yep. I had booked a few shows of that U.S. tour with you guys. I think it might have been your first time in Boston or something like that. I forget what it was. But, yeah, it was you guys, Pieron, Geigen, and then Parasitic Extirpation opening for, I think, we did like two or three shows.
Yeah, man, that was fun. And I know there's kind of like around that time or maybe a little bit after, is that when you join up with Sexcrement?
Yeah, I'd probably say about a year after that, the end of 2008, I joined up with Sexcrement on bass.
Okay, yeah. So there's a lot going on right there in the late 2000s. Between 2007 and 2010, you joined three bands that are all fairly active performing live, right?
Yeah. No, I was definitely. I had a lot of energy in me, and I had a lot of love to give, I guess, out there for bands. But yeah, no, I had joined Dysentery, you know, which, you know, at the time, you know, I guess had a few years in its life already with the release of their split with Gut Rot on Amputated Veins. So it was kind of, they had already established a little foot in the underground. And I was, you know, I had just, you know, lost my previous death metal band, Porphyria. I wanted to kind of keep that ball rolling. And at the same time, me and the singer from Porphyria kind of wanted to be like, we wanted to take that sound and kind of get it more into a more brutal, guttural direction. And then soon enough, a year later, the guys in Sexcrement, you know, needed a new bass player. And I was happy to oblige because I was a fan of the album they put out the year before that. So I was happy to be a part of all the projects that were interested in taking me.
So. You know, you come into Dysentery and you come into Sexcrement, both bands having been established before you We're doing that. Whereas Parasitic Extirpation begins as a bit of an extension of that band you were in before it. So is it fair to say that Parasitic, maybe you have more creative control in the songwriting?
Absolutely, 100%. When Parasitic Extirpation formed, it was kind of my outlet of doing my personal style of death metal in general and at the time, which is kind of, I guess, more of an ADD, off-the-wall, heavy, blasty. I don't know, kind of wanted to do a, you know, an East Coast version of the West Coast unique leader style of, like, you know, the late 90s, early 2000, I guess, with a heavier lean on the, you know, those lurching kind of Northeast style grooves.
Absolutely. Those grooves which you kind of are accentuating in Dysentery. But Parasitic, I think, you know, maybe for the more technically inclined and you know, like old school 90s technical death metal people might find a little bit more out of Parasitic Extirpation. And with Dysentery, like we touched on before, there's even a little bit of that hardcore deathcore influence, I don't know if you want to say, or at least support from that scene and crossover into that scene. Sexcrement, that's more of a, I guess you could say, traditional brutal death metal band, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah. We always considered Sexcrement to kind of be a band that was really, it was really rooted in that heavy, kind of groovy 90s style death metal. You know, we kind of always like to, we were heavily inspired by, like, you know, what Skinless was doing in the early stuff. We were definitely had a lot of feel from, like, Scattered Remnants style stuff. You know, a little bit, you know, the catchy death metal, like Sinister style riffing and stuff like that. But we also tried to put it through a very hard rock and classic heavy metal lens, you know, kind of with, like, a heavier rock groove style drumming. I don't know.
It definitely comes through in the bass there, too. Like, you know, the bargain bin stuff from Sexcrement. Man, I remember listening to that when it came out, and I was like, this is a lot of fun, especially, like, the bass and the drums. Exceptionally fresh compared to a lot of the death metal coming out at that time. It was cool, man. Definitely
cool,
a rad
you.
Release.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, we definitely, you know, bass and drums, as we tried to lock in, and we're kind of trying to look. That's always something I've always tried to do from a bass playing standpoint, is I kind of ground myself in kind of a traditional, more rock, heavy metal, you know, locking in with the kick and kind of not playing with the guitars, trying to play with the drums
more.
Yeah,
it's definitely apparent on Bargain Bin. It's cool shit, man.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Well, it's kind of interesting how those influences and those ideas are crossing over, because when you talk about that, it is very apparent in those Bargain Bin releases by Sexcrement. But the idea of locking into a groove, you're basically incorporating hip-hop rhythms into slam death metal with Dysentery. So it's almost like you're exploring that in both of your bands in different ways then.
Yeah, if there's one thing I've always tried to in the years of trying to play extreme music, is just I've always been interested in locking in and kind of offering a more unique, or, well, not unique, but maybe just a more defined and refined, rhythmic prowess, I guess, in my stuff. I don't know. It's the heavy backbeat, I think, is very important in any heavy percussive music.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially the more you break it down and make it more about the grooves and stuff like that. I don't want to, like, the three bands kind of coinciding, I don't want to jump around all too much. But let's talk about Parasitic a little bit, because I do enjoy that band. And for my personal tastes, as much as I do enjoy Dysentery and Sexcrement, I really like that those Parasitic releases, because they are a little off the wall and techy and interesting death metal wise.
Yeah.
Now, you say that you had originally began the band with your ex vocalist from your prior band, but eventually you have Malika Sundaramurthy in the band, who people might know of Abnormality, right?
Yep. After we finished recording and releasing our 2010 full-length Casketless, released on Severed Records, our singer Tim decided to leave the band because he's just pursuing a different life path, you know, doing the thing that a lot of people do as the years go on. And so we were in going through a transitional period, because not only were we doing a singer change, we were also doing we did a bass player and a drummer change. So it was kind of a couple years of a regrouping and kind of figuring out what we needed to do. But in that time, we recruited a new drummer, a new bass player, and the core guitar player, me and my good friend Chris Casares. We stayed on guitars, and then my good friend Malika stepped on in. We're happy to work together. We'd known each other for, at that point, a decade probably, you know. Always a fan of each other's, you know, grind and kind of willingness to kind of put the pedal to the metal and kind of get out there. So we were happy to work together, and you know, it was a fun time for a few years working on that incarnation of the band and the release we got out of it.
Yeah, and I know eventually I believe she left because Abnormality was taking up a lot of time and as they were picking up steam, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'd probably say a year or two after we released our Putrid Crown EP, I think 2014 we released that, I want to say. I think a year after that, Abnormality got picked up on Metal Blade and was starting to get a lot of steam going. So she didn't want to thin herself, spread herself too thin. So she, you know, obviously made the choice to go out with Abnormality, which was her baby from before joining Parasitic. So, you know, she wanted to go out there and pursue that band to the fullest. And, you know, absolutely, we totally understood and had no problem. She's still a fantastic friend of mine, and excellent vocalist, and doing some killer projects nowadays too.
Yeah, absolutely, shout out to her. I also got to give credit to you said, you know, you revamped the lineup around when she joined. You had Damon Saris, if I got it right, and Jim Fitzpatrick, both
yep.
formerly of the band Boar Corpse, who's great band, better name. I love the name Boar Corpse.
So solid,
always have. Yeah. And I just had to give those guys due credit, because that was the lineup of the band that Artificial Brain performed with on that tour, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those shows we played together, that was the Putrid Crown lineup of that. Great, nice, awesome, tight lineup. I was very happy with what we were able to achieve.
Yeah, I actually got to reach out to not only Malika, but Jim Fitzpatrick could spin a yarn. He's got a few. He was a fun guy to talk to. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah, he could definitely sit down and have a good chat with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, man. So shout out to those guys. Just had good memories reflecting today, preparing for this interview on those shows and that lineup. And just wanted to give Parasitic its due. And I know technically the band is still around, even though there hasn't been much new release, right, with a fairly revamped lineup.
We played our last show in 2016, and at that point, we played Las Vegas Death Fest that summer, 2016, and we kind of just put the band on, I guess you call it, indefinite hiatus. I wouldn't say, you know, it's dead in the dirt, but it's definitely not. The band is definitely not active.
Well,
right now.
Fair enough, and I just want to give it due credit so people can always go back and check out that music, because you got enough going on where it's understandable, because. As we said, with Sexcrement, you're on three different releases through 2014. Dysentery is fairly busy. You put out several releases with them up until 2015's full-length Fragments. You know, so you're like really cranking with these bands. How do you find time in 2014 to sub in on bass for Internal Bleeding?
Well, you know, from like 2007 on, I just kind of like got a heavy bug, and I just kind of wanted to always grind, always wanted to try to put my hands in as many projects as possible, and just kind of keep on going and seeing how far I could get. You know, like I've always had a love of, you know, doing the whole gamut of the extreme music. You know, the adventure, whether it be, you know, promoting, touring, you know, writing, recording, the whole nine yards, you know, I like getting out there as much as possible. And, you know, towards, you know, what I think around 2014, you know, I was doing hard with, I was going out hard with all three of the bands at the time, Parasitic, Dysentery, and Sexcrement. And then, around that time, my friend Chris McCarthy from Without Remorse hit me up, because at the time he was filling in on second guitar for Internal Bleeding, filling in for Brian Hobby for, you know, the shows he wasn't able to do here and there. And they were planning on doing a U.S. tour, I think, fall 2013, 2014. I always forget the year, but they're getting ready to do a U.S. tour with Suffocation and Cataclysm, North American tour. And they needed a bass player for the tour. And, you know, Chris McCarthy knew I get out there. You know, I'm a busy guy. I'm able to get out there and do the thing. And he asked if I was down. And I was obliged to do that. And we did a U.S. tour. And I was on and off in the band playing bass, doing shows kind of around the planet here and there for a couple years, filling in for my dude Jay Liff when he couldn't perform. So I was kind of did a couple years of cool things with that band. And Internal Bleeding is a band I kind of grew up on in the underground death metal scene, one of those early brutal death metal bands that really got me into the Northeast style. And to kind of be able to play some of my favorite songs growing up, it was a massive honor. And I definitely can't thank those dudes enough and for the opportunity and to be able to get to play with such awesome dudes, especially my man, the late Bill Tolley. Fucking an absolute honor and pleasure to be in a band and to jam shows with him. You know, that was just an awesome time in my life. And I definitely owe a lot of learning the national touring game from doing that stuff with them and being out with the big boys, kind of doing my first national tour with them, which kind of got me, I guess, a little bit prepared for my future gig after
that. Okay, yeah. Slow down. We're not there yet. We're not talking
well,
about that band yet.
That's how I got into IB.
We're not talking about that band yet. No, that's good, because I was going to ask you if the Internal Bleeding gig was kind of like the biggest touring and venue type of gig you had gotten to that point, which you explained was. And you didn't just do national tours, which is a big thing enough, but didn't you go to like far Asia and some maybe unexpected and not everyday places you hear about touring?
Yeah, with Internal Bleeding, I was lucky enough to go over to Jakarta, yeah, Indonesia, to play the Hammer Sonic Festival alongside
wow,
Megadeth, and Asking Alexandria too.
Okay, okay.
Oh hell yeah, dude!
Oh, do it. Get the check. All right, sick.
Yeah, yeah. You know, go out there, see the world. You know, see a massive tsunami, and then, you know, rock
so,
out.
So yeah. So well, I mean, we don't have all night, and we want to be respectful of your time. But take me through that a little bit, man, because I've barely been out of Long Island, let alone Indonesia.
Yeah, well, you know, being out with the Internal Bleeding boys, that was my first time ever getting outside of North America to play a show. So to make my first international show in Indonesia was pretty wild. I want to say the traveling time out there was over a day's worth. I think we did a little bit of a night's sleep in an airport. But, you know, I was kind of a greenhorn when it comes to those heavy traveling. And so that was quite the wild experience. And then to arrive in the sweltering area of Jakarta and just be whisked off to a hotel and, you know, basically being, you know, treated like, you know, semi-royalty, you know, on the other side of the planet, you know, was pretty wild, you know. Kind of going out there with my friends in Suffocation, it was kind of wild being like, oh, here you go, fly across the planet with dudes you've been jamming with and some friends and, you know, and go see a festival with 10,000 people going absolutely nuts to brutal death metal. You know, it's something you don't get to see every day.
Yeah, they have a big death metal scene in Indonesia, from what I understand.
They are diehard lifers as hard as, wow, it gets, I pretty much
would
say.
Man. Hope to go one day, oh, yeah, man.
Shout out to Chris McCarthy, too.
Yeah.
Yep. Good dude, friend,
oh, yeah,
of the show.
Yeah.
All,
awesome,
all
guy,
the guys you mentioned.
And, love hearing that connection.
All both the Chris's. We did a Tom and I drove out there and did a smoke sessions with them a few months ago now. But yeah, shout out to Internal Bleeding. Rest in peace to Bill Tolley. And I just wanted to ask you a little bit, because I thought, and you know, to piggyback off of that, I thought it was very appropriate when you were filling in for Internal Bleeding back in the day, because knowing you from Dysentery, I, you know, Dysentery gets lumped in sometimes with deathcore or beatdown, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. In my imagination, it's kind of just an extension of that 90s groove death metal that Internal Bleeding and Devourment and bands like that were doing. Because Dysentery seems to have the knowledge in terms of the songwriting and composition of groove-laden death metal, and that's like the difference between death metal and hardcore, in my opinion, is a lot of times it's in the composition.
Yeah, you know, I always like to think, you know, being the gentleman that we are at the age we are, playing this style of music, you know, I guess we have a lot more listening experience under our belt, you know. While we grew up with death metal and hardcore, we know where the genres come from, where their roots are, and we, you know, I think, you know, I often think, you know, to really understand where a genre is going, you really have to understand its roots and where it's been, you know, to be able to take it in the next area. And you know, I don't want to say that Dysentery is taking death metal anywhere exciting or anything like that, but you know, like we have experienced ears. We've been listening to death metal a very long time. We like to try to put our love of Internal Bleeding, of Dehumanized, of, you know, but mix it in with like our love of, you know, Irate and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, it's all brutal heavy music that has a link and that can be easily intertwined. I just don't see it happening enough, but at the same time, we want to have those evil death metal riffs thrown in there too, because that's what makes it death metal.
Absolutely.
You know, but the grooves are what makes it unique for us.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And, you know, I just wanted to give Dysentery its due, and we're going to give you an opportunity towards the end of the interview to talk about what you may have been working on behind the scenes and what the future holds for your various projects. You kind of explained with Parasitic that it's a little bit on hiatus. But, you know, getting into that, you alluded to something. You ended up joining the acclaimed, I guess you want to say deathcore, just for lack of arguing about a term, but the band Fit for an Autopsy, which has garnered quite a bit of support in the metal scene over the last several years. You joined them in 2017, is that correct?
Officially, yeah, I joined at the beginning of 2017. I first started touring with them fall of 2016, but yeah, you're pretty much on with that.
Okay, I mean, and you know, I tried to give it an apt description about where they stand in the scene, but obviously that's a pretty big step to step up and join that band, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, professionally is a big step up from what I was used to coming up in the death metal underground, but you know, is definitely a big step professionally and musically. You know, yeah, a lot of people would probably use the term deathcore, because the band definitely does have its origins in that style. I guess I kind of lean towards call the band, I use the very broad umbrella term extreme music due to the kind of blending of genres we've been doing on the past couple albums since I've kind of been in the band.
Okay, yeah, and again, I just say that not to pigeonhole anybody. But yeah, we'll just say the extreme metal band, Fit for an Autopsy, doesn't matter.
I feel you, it's all good.
Yeah, I just want to make the point that it's because that's obviously a bigger name that enjoys a lot of support in the metal community. And to join them, now tell me about that. Was that kind of, you know, you toured around with Internal Bleeding, you've been making your name in these more underground death metal bands, so your name comes up when they need somebody? How does that work?
Well, the relationship with Fit for an Autopsy is, I'd probably go back as far as 2009 directly, and even further before then, because the original singer of Fit for an Autopsy is actually a original New Hampshire resident who kind of came up in the local metalcore, hardcore, death metal scene. And he kind of eventually hopped on Fit for an Autopsy on vocals in the late 2000s. And I actually booked Fit for an Autopsy's first Northeast New England show, I think, in 2009 when I was booking. I booked a couple festivals, death metal festivals, in the Rhode Island area, which I had them up for their first, like, out-of-state kind of deal. So I'd kind of known them for a while. Dysentery played the first Fit for an Autopsy CD release show in like 2011. So there'd been a relationship established over the years. We'd play shows with them here and there because, you know, as like you said, you know, Dysentery has a little bit of a crossover appeal into that deathcore scene from time to time. So with that comes some of those shows, and Fit for an Autopsy kind of started out in that scene. So there'd kind of been like a link from there, but I don't know. I think around 2016 or so, I had just stopped jamming with Internal Bleeding because they had found a new full-time bass player at that time with Sean Kennedy. So I had kind of, you know, and Sexcrement had stopped playing at that point. And I believe Parasitic Extirpation had kind of been slowing down. And I was just doing Dysentery, really. And I was kind of looking for another band that was, you know, maybe a little bit heavier on the gigging side, or, you know, a little more heavy duty on the touring side. And I kind of kept my my name out there. And I believe it was my good friend Todd Stern from Psychroptic and Hammerfight that dropped my name when the Fit for an Autopsy dudes were in need of a new bass player, because Todd had been doing merch for them for a few tours here and there. So when they were in need for a dude, my man Todd dropped my name, and they hit me up, and I did a tour with them. They weren't too annoyed with me, and they kept me on, and here we are a few years later, and I've been doing some stuff with him.
Awesome, man. Shout out to Todd, another guy I miss seeing around in the metal scene, man. Good guy, Todd.
Love Todd, my boy.
Yeah, good dude. A lot to talk about, too, man. Maybe we should get him. So many guests, so little time. That should be our motto on Heavy Hole Podcast. Wish I could interview everybody, but we got you here now. And so, I mean, talking about that, is it like a kind of a little bit of a culture shock to you, like getting into Fit for an Autopsy and seeing how they conduct business and how they tour? Or do you kind of see you feel like you got a glimpse of that already with the IB touring? Like what was that like? Like the first time you really had to, go on the road with them or play a big show with them? Was it like you felt like you really stepped up?
I kind of had my glimpses, I guess, here and there with the IB dudes. I'd gotten to, you know, do some bigger stuff, and even I'd had some good opportunities with Dysentery to open some bigger tours over the years here and there. So I've definitely seen my fair share of stuff like that, but going into the Fit for an Autopsy situation definitely stepped it up big. I kind of joined at a good time with those guys because they were starting to pick up steam, but they were still doing, you know, still playing a lot of venues that I'd even play with Dysentery and stuff like that, you know, but they were clearly picking up more and more. But, you know, Fit for an Autopsy was already an oiled machine rolling pretty hard, but, you know, I like to think that I've had a lot of experience over the years with my hands-in approach on my bands over the years, that it really wasn't very foreign or anything like that. I kind of just felt like I was kind of just moving into a new band like I've done so many times over the years. And it just kind of, I guess since I joined, while the ball was starting to roll but not, you know, that heavy yet, I guess it was easier for me to ease into it with those guys.
Awesome. Yeah, another day at the office.
As as guys have been playing, you know, heavy extreme music for, you know, a couple decades plus or however it is at this point, you know, it's just something that I love that I always want to be doing. So it's just, it's another chapter for me, you know, that's the way I see
it. So with Fit for an Autopsy, when do you start to see things really picking up steam? Would you say there was a point where you said, wow, this is changing and it's getting bigger than I realized, or it's getting as big as I thought?
I guess I didn't realize exactly what was in store, because when I started jamming with them, you know, it was kind of, I was doing some touring and stuff like that, so I wasn't really privy of what was going on. But, within a few months of me joining the band, we had released a new album, and, you know, that album definitely picked up steam. The Great Collapse in 2017, it picked up steam pretty quickly. And, you know, within that year, we were doing some big tours with big names that, you know, I'd only seen as like the headliners of, you know, the metal and hardcore fest that I'd been growing up going to, kind of deal. You know, and then being a part of such a bigger scale, it was pretty wild to kind of see it happen so quickly. But, you know, after the first year, it was, you know, it picked up heavy and, you know, the ride has been rolling, I guess, ever since.
Yeah. Well, up until coronavirus. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I don't even think we have to say
I'm
point.
Just,
that's
I'm trolling.
That's how
I'm
that
trolling,
goes.
As the kids say. But that's, well, let's drop a little, what do you want to call it, palate cleanser here. Something I dropped in last time. We're talking about touring. We're talking about picking up steam with working, putting in work in bands. Real quick, hot take. Top three albums to play on a road trip when you're out on the road, when it's your turn to drive.
Oh boy. I guess it kind of depends if it's like a nighttime or a daytime drive. But usually if I'm going for, you know, some real like van jams, I'm going to go for nighttime. And it's going to usually involve late 70s, early 80s Judas Priest. It's probably going to be like Sad Wings of Destiny, like Sin After Sin, maybe like, you know, a little British Steel or something like that. Just really anthemic, you know, maybe a little Defenders of the Faith, but something I can really sing along and jam.
Eye-opening music.
You know, just Judas Priest is my favorite band of all time, bar none. So it's comfort food for me, you know. It's when I want to be in my zone and just have the best time I can, I just put on some classic Priest and I just go for it.
And who falls asleep to Judas Priest, you know? So you got, you know, when he's trying to stay awake.
No. You can't turn your back on the Ripper. It's impossible thing.
Well, hold on a second, because you talk about the Ripper. Do you follow Judas Priest into the post-Halford era?
I do, but I don't celebrate it that much, honestly. You know, when I was getting into heavy metal as a young man, the Ripper era was the current Priest era, and I got my copy of Jugulator and, you know, and that stuff, and it's cool, but, you know, Priest needs Halford. Yeah. Halford needs Priest. It's peanut butter and chocolate for me.
I love it, man. I do respect those albums you brought up, but I'm very much a metal, like Painkiller is my Judas Priest go-to album, man. You know what I mean?
I do know a lot of people that prefer the extreme side of Priest, and while I appreciate it, the hard rock, heavy metal, rock and roll Priest, that is where my heart lies.
Not going to take it away from you, man.
It's
fair
like,
enough.
Like Ripper was just house sitting, you know what I mean? Yeah. And like he had a couple of parties, but like they didn't burn the place down. Yeah. And then when Halford came back, they put a fat extension on that house and came out with Painkiller.
He's like, hey, guys, I fed the cat while you were away. You know, he got a little fat, maybe, you know, maybe not in his best shape. But, you know, he's still here. You know, the cat's happy to see you. You know, have fun.
Yeah, kept it going. No offense to Ripper, man.
Love it. But, love it all.
No, absolutely. I guess also good Van Jams. I also will always go for some Thin Lizzy because I'm always going for some I need some good comfort food. So I'll listen to something like Black Rose or Bad Reputation or Chinatown or something like that. Just great, classic, perfect songwriting, hard rock. And I got to go. My third choice will definitely be a great joke for my fit guys. Blasting my cassette copy of Candlemass Nightfall at 3:30 in the morning, making people just scream at me to shut that shit off.
That's Candlemass
that's a classic story. People will still give me shit for. Listen, when Messiah was cranking, you start listening, all right?
Candlemass has been getting a lot of flack on this show lately.
I love Candlemass. Love Castle. You can't. It's just so crushing.
All right. Well, I had to pop that question on you.
No, that's a good one. I love that. You should definitely ask. Start grilling people on the tour jam. That's the way to go.
I kind of spontaneously asked. I think it was Steve Schwegler of Pieron was the spontaneous one, and now I'm trying to work it in. So keep trying to work that question in. And, you know, speaking of which, we know you haven't been on tour in a while, unfortunately, like we alluded to before, like anybody else. But this is, you know, what's been going on with your respective bands that you're part of for listeners and followers of Fit for an Autopsy, of Dysentery. What is there anything behind the scenes? Can you tell us about any plans? What's going on?
Well, right now the wheels are turning for the writing machines, really, for the bands. You know, we're just hoping to kind of make sure we have new material ready for when, you know, when the time calls for it. But, you know, the wheels are definitely turning for both Dysentery and Fit for an Autopsy. So, you know, the year hasn't been all for naught. And, you know, on top of those projects, I've also been getting busy with some other stuff as well. I guess I'm going to take the Segway machine from you on that.
Only because I know
one. Yeah, exactly. You know, just because, you know. But yeah, in the past 6 months, I've started to take up another couple new projects as well. I have been jamming with my good friend Evan Duplessis, formerly of Composted, Sexcrement, going as far back as Terminally You're Aborted Ghost, and the current vocalist in Scattered Remnants. Yeah. We are currently jamming in a project together called Exorcist, C-Y-S-T, Exorcist, you know, play on the words.
Nice.
And it's just basically just a basic, no-frills, old-school, dirty death metal, you know, just kind of back to basics, having fun, kind of playing, you know, dirty, primordial stuff, you know, nothing to impress anybody, just, you know, metal of death, if you will, you know, but I can't claim that term. That's for other people to decide for me.
Wow. Loaded right
there. Yeah, you're getting a man excited over here.
Listen, I'm a longtime listener of the show enough to know the keywords. You know, I got to be careful because I can't be claiming
that. I'll be the judge of that blue.
But,
you're speaking Will's love language right now.
Shout to Evan, man. Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm very excited to check that out, man, eventually.
Yeah, we've just been kind of cracking away. You know, I'm not sure when we're going to be releasing material, but we have a few songs in the bag and kind of just recording stuff ourselves and kind of just, you know, waiting until everything's ready to go for that. But, you know, it's not going to shake the world or anything. We're just adding another, you know, shitty Bandcamp death metal project to the
hey,
world.
Hey, at least you're honest. I'll give you credit. I'll give it a spin just because you're honest about it, man. All gravy, man.
Hey, man, it's you. You know, Evan's taking up drums, and he's like, "Hey, man, I need someone to jam on." I was like, "You know what? Let's have fun." Yeah. You know, I haven't been able to do, you know, this simple of a style of music. It's kind of getting back to basics, and you know, there's something pure and simple about that. I think
absolutely get it out. And you know, I joke around about there's so many bands. There's a lot of bands nowadays, but you know, at the end of the day, man, everybody should be out there doing their thing and spreading music and sharing it, man. And what a problem to have too much death metal, man. You know, it's like having too much water or too much money, you know what I mean? So, but that's cool, man. And anything else you want to plug or any other projects going on, anything like that?
Yeah, I guess I got one more for you, you know. Because of this new project I've been doing with Evan, Exorcist, it's kind of opened up another door a little unexpectedly for me. But like I said, my friend Evan in Exorcist, he's a singer of Scattered Remnants. And in the past year, unfortunately, their longtime guitar player, Rob Setringen, has stepped out of the picture. And I have decided, I have been brought in as the new second guitar player of Scattered Remnants, which, needless to say, I am extremely excited about. And I'm very, very happy to be a part of that team. And I'm really happy to, you know, keep the legacy going the best I can with those guys. So I'm stoked on that.
Wow, big news. You heard it here on Heavy Hole Podcast first. We already dropped air horns underneath that, Tom.
That's
post horns.
Yeah, that's. Thank you, Tom. Yeah, that's wow. I kind of knew it. because when we were messaging back and forth, you didn't reveal it, but you said, I'm going to have a little announcement to, you know, I'm going to have something to tell you about, you know, by the time we do this interview. And I had a feeling. I knew you were joining Scattered Remnants. I felt it in my Scattered Remnants radar.
Listen, you heard it here. You hit the precognitive, finding out the, just storytellers, you know, Big Will edition.
I could feel it in my bones. I felt the shaking in my knuckles today, like when it rains,
yes, the joints were getting wobbly.
Yeah,
on
I knew there was a change. Well, shout to Rob of Sky Remnants. We, you know, listeners can obviously go back. We had a big, massive triple interview episode with three longtime Scattered Remnants members and got into the whole history of that band, Rob Settergren included. We wish him the best. He was a real fun guy to talk to.
Everybody, all those dudes are awesome. And, you know, Rob's still a part of the team. And, you know, there's new material in the works that he has been a part of. And, you know, needless to say, I'm, you know, hoping to only kind of continue on in the, you know, the proper tradition of the band, you know, mm-hmm. being a longtime fan of the band. I just want to try to keep the band's legacy going and get, you know, and let people know, you know, and hopefully we can get back to doing some cool shows that they had scheduled originally before everything fell apart. But you know, I'm definitely stoked on that, and we've been just kind of grinding away on that. And
absolutely, man.
That's that on
and
that.
And now,
so,
just
stoked.
Before we wrap up, something I wanted to ask you respectfully. Because, you know, like kind of like an elephant in the room type of thing, we're all aware of the climate and the scene. You know, with respect to Fit for an Autopsy, did you get anybody trying to troll you or give you shit for being a part of that band from the underground death metal scene? We'll say elitists, so to speak.
You know, I kind of expected to get a little bit more flack for it than I did. Surprisingly, I haven't, you know, we all know how people can be in the underground scenes and, you know, the style of deathcore or whatever you want to call what we play, it might not be the most respected, amongst the most diehards, what you will, but, a lot of people in the scene have been cool and welcoming of it and, happy that, you know, that I'm just doing my thing. You know, the fact of the matter is it doesn't change the fact that I still love playing death metal and extreme music. So it's not like I left or anything like that. So I think people see that as I'm still, I still am in it for the music and I love it. So, you know, I don't think I'm a sellout, but who knows?
As soon as any heavy band gets any attention or success, they are labeled many things that they are truly just not. Comes with the territory, and I'm glad that you got little to no flack for that, man.
But yeah, I probably just don't hear it.
Yeah, and you know, I ask that respectfully. We try to cover the broad range of extreme music on this podcast, and there are some people that will fault you for not just playing a specific brand of technical old school death metal. You don't use a HM2. You do use a HM2 pedal. You don't use a HM2 pedal. I don't. You know, there's elitists out there. But I had to ask. I thought it was interesting, and that's good because you know that's the thing is you do have the reputation and the ground to stand on in the underground death metal community without a doubt. And speaking about the underground death metal community, we do have one Patreon question. I already kind of touched on it in the beginning, but I feel like it would be a good thing to come back to if you could give us your thoughts on this. Shout to Patreon pledge and longtime supporter Andy Sung, who we have to get on the show.
Oh, my man, Andy.
Dude, we're going down the list in this interview of all the other people we got to interview. It's crazy, man. I've been meaning to get him on. But he writes, Dysentery always seemed to be a band that has had a close relationship with hardcore and the hardcore scene, and I mean that in a positive way. Many live clips seem to have been from very violent in the same way as you would see at a beatdown show. Is that sort of mixing between hardcore and death metal common in the Boston area, and how has hardcore influenced your sound? I also want to say that Dysentery is one of the heaviest bands I have ever seen live, and hanging out with them at Central Illinois Metal Fest in 2012 was one of the coolest experiences of my life. Some of the nicest people on this planet.
Oh, I love that man. Andy is one of the best dudes ever. One of the heaviest vocalists. All the projects he's done over the years is just absolutely amazing. I can't say enough of how much I love that man. He's the absolute dude. Thank you, Andy. I love you, dude. But regardless, as far as to answer the questions, as far as the kind of violence and the kind of the aggression kind of thing locally, I don't really see that in the Boston scene. That is generally something that we kind of get more of a reaction in when we go outside of the Northeast and we head down to PA, Jersey, New York, Long Island, that kind of stuff. That's kind of where our, I guess, our rowdy reputation has kind of more come from. Because Boston doesn't, you know, while Boston does have that reputation like we talked about earlier, definitely, like, for dysentery shows, you don't see that kind of that level of aggression. That's definitely something you got to get a little bit outside of town. You got to go to Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York. You know what I'm talking about.
Jersey, New Jersey's crazy. New Jersey, you know, the thing is, man, there's definitely some violent stuff at hardcore shows in Long Island. I'm not taking anything away from anybody, any tough guys out there.
If that's a point you're trying to get across.
From what I've seen, North Jersey in particular, man, those guys are still living in the 90s before, like, closed circuit cameras and shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, to get that level of aggression at shows in Boston, it's generally not going to happen at metal shows. It's definitely going to be, at hardcore shows and stuff like that. It's just, dysentery crowds just get wacky when you get down to those areas. That's where we really get into our element, I guess.
I'm not sure that they realize there's a difference between death metal and hardcore in New Jersey.
Hey, man, you know, I think that's half the beauty.
I'm joking. I'm joking, and I say that out of love because I love playing New Jersey.
Listen, it's low IQ stuff.
I miss playing the Meat Locker. I miss playing a lot of places out there. Shout out to Rob Wharton bringing us down to Jersey a bunch of times, but
good old Bobby Wharton.
We've had him on the podcast, so.
So
Blue, we've talked all that stuff. We got Andy's question in. You know by now that I always close out the shows by asking you to recommend one newer and one older album by any artist you like, just to recommend us something cool to listen to.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I might have more than one and stuff like that, but going back for an old one, I've been ripping out for the past week or so that I haven't pulled out in a long time, and that would be Edge of Sanity,
nice.
Crimson. I know the term melodic death metal might kind of be seen as an embarrassing a not so well looked upon down term, but man, that album just, its blend of heavy metal and kind of just powerful emotional content in the chord choices and stuff like that. That album just kills me entirely. I just love that album specifically, but Edge of Sanity and everything Dan Suano does, he's just a master of his craft. I've just been jamming that album lately.
Is that that's the one that's like a half hour almost?
Yeah, and it's just all intertwined songs and repeating themes, riffs coming back throughout the album. It's just really well done, and honestly, like, the way they hit the nerve for me for melodic death metal, like, I only really heard, like, done again nowadays by, like, Horrendous or something like that. Just the itch they scratch with doing melodic death metal but not having it be the corny melodic, you know. It's just, it's a tough line.
Know, when you say melodic death metal, I put that genre label in the same bin as, like, goth and emo, where it means something totally different if you're over 30.
You're completely 100% right, you know, on that stuff.
It's a,
yeah,
it's a
exactly.
Totally different thing. But so what about your newer album?
Well, I wanted to throw a couple new ones at you because, there's one I just picked up, started jamming. It's a brutal death metal band called Undeciphered.
Okay.
They just put out a full length, I believe, on Amputated Vein. The album is called Beneath the Gentle Smile, I believe. It's just really powerful, hyper-blasting, brutal death. Really chunky vocal. They got the Joe Wolf Predator-style vocals going on. The crazy, like, Danny Malignancy-style stuff. But just ultra intense, like orchidectomy, but thicker sounding, I guess, maybe, kind of. And I've been jamming that album. It's been killing me. And I wanted to kind of just give props to another great death metal release from last year. The band is called Deliquesce. It's D-E-L-I-Q-U-E-S-C-E. Yeah. They put out an EP last year called Engineered Frailty. And you guys brought up Inveracity, I believe, a couple months ago. And not since Inveracity have I heard a band outside of the United States sound so U.S. and they kind of, like, nail it. It's members of Odious and Bowel and Disentomb, so it's like an Australian band, but they're doing, it's like technical dehumanized, but a band from Australia just nailing a New York vibe. It's just, on point. Just so, so good. Definitely highly recommend it. They put out like a one song single maybe at the beginning of the year.
I think I might have brought it up on the show. If not, it's definitely something that crossed my attention a while back.
Yeah, really, really good, exceptional
stuff.
Yeah,
and you mentioned Undeciphered. Do they hide their identity, do you know?
I have no clue. I've only seen the album cover. You know, I really haven't dug into it too much, but I came across the album, and I've just been jamming it and loving it.
Well, because you referenced Danny Nelson and Joe Wolf on the vocals. I know who the singer is. I just don't want to spill the beans right now.
Okay. So you're a little bit more privy than I am.
Yeah, well, let me look it up. I don't want to...
Yeah, I haven't done the Metal Archives deep dive, so...
All right, listen, it's on Metallum, so I didn't spill it. But it's Paulo Paguntalon, friend of the show.
Hey, look Airhorn. At you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's Paulo Paguntalon... with Nikhil T of Anal Stab Wound.
You may remember him from his work. Yeah, that's another great new band that I heard recently, too.
And Oscar Ortega of, like, three dozen bands.
Oh, all right. I'm not that privy. I'm not underground enough to know, you know, who's in the band.
Well, you know, we can't all be Big Will Heavy Hole podcasts.
No, it's true. It's true. We all can't be still rocking that BioLich AOL address.
Oh boy. Yeah, I definitely do not have an active social life.
It's, you know what? The BioLich 2004 demo is my other classic release.
Oh boy.
That's my choice. Love
Don't
that
send
demo.
Him there.
Love
Don't
that
send
demo.
Him there. We recorded a couple of things. But Undeciphered, definitely check that out. A new Paulo Paguntalon. He's been very busy during this pandemic recording material. Undeciphered. Yeah, highly recommended. I just want to make sure real quick that they weren't, you know, people like the mysterious names, but they're not doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So, all right, great, man. So Undeciphered. What was the other? What was it?
Deliquesce. I don't really know how to pronounce it.
I mean, if you're gonna do a band that sounds like Dehumanized, you might as well call it Deliquesce.
Yeah. No, I keep on thinking delicatessen. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's. I mean, it's Queens, right?
You know. Yeah,
so
exactly,
New
exactly.
York. So jealous of that name.
We appreciate it, Blue. It was great catching up with you and learning a few new things, actually, and talking to you about everything you got going on. Like everybody during this crazy time, we just hope that things get back to a more productive work cycle for you and all of your projects. Very excited to hear about that Scattered Remnants hookup that you got going on. Love the name Exorcist, C-Y-S-T at the end. That's interesting.
Yeah, there you
go. It's a very old school play on words.
Yeah, you know, we're trying to fit the style. It's no frills, basic old school death metal, trying to keep it that way.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. So we're going to keep our eye out for all that stuff, man. Really good good look. Glad that you're keeping busy as always.
You're trying to, you know, trying.
Yeah. Yeah, death metal on all fronts. So, brother, great talking to you. Any last parting words for listeners of our show and fans of your music?
No, I can't really say anything else. You know, I'm going to let you guys do the one thing, so I'm not going to steal that thunder from you.
All right, because then we couldn't even say goodbye ourselves. We would just have to
exactly.
End it.
So I'll let you take care of that.
All right, man. Well, Blue, we appreciate you talking to us tonight, and we appreciate all of your hard work over the years in music. We've talked about a lot of it for the listeners. They can go back and check out all of your different albums and anxiously await the new stuff, man. You have yourself a great night, and we're going to be keeping our eyes out for new stuff by you.
Absolutely. The pleasure is all mine, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Dude, all right, take it easy, brother. We'll be in touch, man.
All right, peace.
All right. Thank you very much to our guest, Peter Blue Spinazzola of Fit for an Autopsy, Dysentery, and now, as we heard out, Exorcist and even Scattered Remnants. You heard it here on Heavy Hole Podcast first, exclusive, all right? Shout out to him for sharing that news with us, as well as his stories of years past and his experience in underground music. Great to have him on. Like I mentioned before, somebody I've known through the years playing shows together with our various bands. Always good to catch up with old friends, especially in these times, man. Even good to catch up with you, Tom, because you're not even here. We miss you already.
I'm like 5-0 right now. I hope you guys are looking at the same moon I am.
Wow, Fievel, an American story. Fievel goes west, I believe, was the secret.
Yeah.
Brilliant tales of American history.
Southern cinematography. Tom goes south. Yeah.
Yeah. Sweeping score. But listen, guys. As much as I'd like to sit here all night and recommend the animated Fievel series to our listeners, I want you guys to recommend me a couple of sick tunes, and I'll recommend one back. How's that sound?
Sounds glorious.
All right. Take the floor, Justin.
All right. I'm gonna pull up this. All right. So check it out. My recommendation this week, bringing in a new project, something maybe less heard of on the Heavy Hole. I got Worlds of Pleasure from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Blistering hardcore EP from this duo, this project of these two people featuring vocalist Jess Nix. She plays in the Calgary hardcore band Mortality Rate. Has also been featured on some Acacia Strain and Judiciary tracks, along with Coulter, who takes care of the instrumentation. He's from a few other Calgary bands. But this is, again, something a little out of my wheelhouse, straight edge vegan hardcore, very, very angry, super pissed off. These vocals are fucking rabid, just absolutely nasty. But what I loved about this was the overall chunkiness and not only of these super heavy riffs that I'm very drawn to, but the production I thought was extremely thick. This drum sound is fucking beautiful. That snare, we're getting into like ping territory with this snare, but what an amazing job on this three song EP by this fucking duo. And everything I've been reading about this band since discovering them over the past week was how people just keep playing these three songs, and this is at least people are looking for like big things for this band to come out in the next couple of years or something like that, blah blah blah. But I love it. I've been doing the same as all of these people, playing these three songs over and over again. Very impressed. Worlds of Pleasure, man.
The visual, the layout, and the little samples, the little outros they use give it a lot of personality.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting, quirky. Character to it there. It's cool.
It's funny. It's an interesting, like, quirky character, just like you said, until you read the lyrics. And it's like that militant veganism in hardcore, which, again, like, I'm not down with militant anything, but I'm giving it a pass because I just kind of love the overall presentation of what's going on, the riffs, the production, mostly here. And I think it's definitely worth a listen.
Tonight, Heavy Hole, my recommendation from Georgia. They are not from Georgia. The band Insistent, their upcoming release, Disease. It's coming out June 2nd of 2021. This band is from Prague. Oh, boy.
Not Georgia.
Grindcore.
Not Georgia at all, no. It's this grindcore with what definitely feels like a death metal vibe. This band started in 2017. Disease is their second full length. I listened to their first full length. It's called Suspect, and I loved it. Wouldn't call it a full length, though. 13 minutes. So mixed feelings on runtimes there, but either way, it's worth listening. This band is strong. This is a strong grind outfit. They got some stuff that throws back to like they're playing riffs that remind me of like Scum era Napalm, but with like the modern thickness, the clarity of some things that have been produced in modern times, but do not sound too overdone, too plasticky. It's a really great, on top of mix, just a like solid grindcore presentation with a wonderful vocalist. This guy is barking. He's just going at it. Controlled, not the rabid kind of love of grindcore vocalist, but rather the very controlled, concise, preacher matter-of-fact style vocals that I like very much. Three members of this band, they were in the band Destructive Explosion of Anal Garland.
Oh!
Yeah, so this, you know, we've talked about them a couple times in the show, and I feel like this is a...
I remember when they broke up. I turned to my mother and father, and I said, things will never be the same. Destructive Explosion of Anal Garland is no longer with us. The band broke up. Everybody had a very hard time accepting that. I went to work the next day. Co-workers didn't even know what to do. But as you're talking about this, Tom, we know that some members did go on to be in this band, and also Abhorrent Cabaret, the gore grind band I brought in several months ago.
Oh, dude, I totally missed that. That band is sick. That's like one of my favorite recommendations on this show.
Their former vocalist, Kalak, went on to form Abhorrent Cabaret. But yeah, listen, I mean, we could do an entirely different podcast platform talking about the destructive breakup of Destructive Explosion of Anal Garland and how it affected various members of my family. But Tom, let's not get too off track here. I mean, you know I get emotional when you bring that band up. Get us back on track here.
Yeah, so you know you might be missing your tour D'Anal and all that stuff, but we're on now to Insistent, and they're insistent on having a werewolf on every single one of their releases. And I love a good theme. It doesn't seem to be that they're talking about werewolves all that much, but that's okay. Who cares? Good imagery goes a long way. So check out Insistent's upcoming release, Disease, out on Bandcamp, June 2nd, 2021. Check it out.
Okay, guys, do you like forests? You like going out in the woods, nature? It's nice, right?
I've seen it.
Watch out! Watch it, because sometimes it gets sadistic out there. Sorry, I didn't want to scare anybody. But you got to know your safety when you're going out there in the woods. Sometimes a forest can be downright sadistic to the point where it has a K at the end of the word sadistic instead of a C. Maybe that's how they spell it in Finland, where these guys are from. Maybe they're just that creepy and crazy. I don't know. This is a band that I really got to go back and explore because Transcending Obscurity Records, quality label, just released a single you can look up today. I checked it out on YouTube from their forthcoming Obscure Old Remains EP, which is going to be out in May 2021. And I was really fascinated by this single, Mandragore. At first, it kind of seems like a slow, doomy, maybe you're like cyanide-esque doom death. We don't really care about going fast. We're just death metal thing going on. But they play with the rhythm a little bit. And then after a while, it picks up, and it goes here and it goes there, and they bring a riff back. There's something about this band that is very riff and hook driven, while at the same time steeped in creepy, atmospheric, blackened, old school death metal. And I put it, I don't want to just right off the bat compare it to any other bands. It's very interesting. And I really want to go back and check out some of their back catalog now, because they do have a few albums before this upcoming release that's going to be out soon now. But it caught my attention because the way they like to play with rhythms and change up the beat and the tempo and the way the dynamics of the guitars, there's a lot of guitar harmonics that kind of harken back to that golden era of classic 80s guitar harmonic driven metal. But again, they take it sometimes and they do it a little different. They twist it up a little different. And I just love the way they're consistently taking kind of like the classic metal format, maybe we could even say pre-core metal from like the 80s and early 90s, and twisting it around a little bit. I've said a few times, I believe, in the show and in conversation with people, there's certain bands, Execration from Norway, Morbus Kron, rest in peace, great band, and Horrendous from the United States. And those bands I've always grouped in together, not because they sounded identical, but they always sound to me like as if you took that early 90s trajectory of thrash-influenced classic death metal, and it didn't, and you had an alternate reality where brutal guttural death metal didn't happen, like futuristic modern death metal. That's where those guys are. You know, they kind of sidestepped the guttural brutal movement, and they kept pushing that thrash lead guitar driven form of death metal into the future. And this band, Sadistic Forest, really belongs in that caliber and that class of bands, in my opinion. I enjoyed this song. I checked out a little. I peppered a few of their older songs in on my YouTube, but kind of an underrated band. Not easy to find all their stuff. You got to look them up. Really, really interesting stuff. Maybe not your traditional Finnish style death metal, but not really your traditional style anything death metal. This is a cool band that is steeped in metal tradition without sounding unoriginal at all. So I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I'm just going to leave it up to you to check out Sadistic Forest. And if you need a good reason to, you could also go to the fact that bassist and vocalist Markus Makonen is an ex-member of Hooded Menace, a Finnish band some people might be more familiar with.
Yeah, it's really cool. You can like, you could tell they've like, there's at least a toe dipped in that Finnish sludge. But
yes.
With everything that you said, it with so much of that traditional metal and like compositionally, it gives it this like timeless feature. You know what I mean? Where you can't pinpoint it to a certain era necessarily.
Are they King Diamonds? Are they Death? Are they, you know, it's, I don't know. It's just so metal and very dynamic and atmospheric. Yeah. A lot of like kind of virtuosic musicianship without being flashy and showing off. These guys just get it and do it, and I enjoyed this a lot. I'm going to be looking out for this. Okay, so that was my recommendation for tonight that I'm very, very excited about. I want to listen to that all night. Wah. So, it's time to go.
Me too.
All right? We brought you Blue from Dysentery and Fit for an Autopsy and all those bands. We brought you a couple of recommendos. And now you know what time it is, kids. Parting is such sweet swell. We want to thank Andy Sunk, longtime supporter and listener, for supporting us on the old Patreon. If you want to get on our Patreon, so maybe you get a shot at learning who's coming up on the show. You want to inject your own question, insert your narrative into the conversation. No. you just check us out. Go to patreon.com. How does it work?
/Heavy Hole Podcast.
Right? Is that it, Tom?
Yeah, you can also get there through heavyholepodcast.com.
You know what? If you're unsure like me, if you're a boomer, if you wear Nike Air Monarchs and sweatpants, go to heavyholepodcast.com, and all the links are conveniently there. You don't have to do any kind of crazy magic on the computer. You want to follow us on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. You want to buy some merch. We got some shirts and some patches. Or you want to support us on Patreon and get that bonus content and maybe inject your own question into an upcoming interview. It's all available on HeavyHolePodcast.com. Now, We explained Tom is he's out there. He's we were blowing his cover in witness protection right now.
On location.
It's wild. Mm-hmm. I Tom, just give
Someone's
your girlfriend the money and the keys to the car and turn yourself in, please.
All right. Well, I see what's happening here.
The cops are here.
Guys, I miss you.
I made a deal. I turned on you. This is all turned into the CIA thriller Ronin starring Robert De Niro.
That's right.
No. Yeah. But listen, we do have to wrap it up relatively quick tonight. Tom, how many bars of service do you have on your cell phone out there in the great southern expansive wilderness?
And with that brand new cell tower, I'm getting just about one.